106.6.
Okay, that was Korn with Freak on a Leash. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDFever.co.uk is a non-profit website, and, well, I keep saying it's recently had a revamp, but that was a few months ago. But anyway, go and have a look. Now. Well, when the song's playing, perhaps. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And what's coming up in the first hour, it's everything to do with movies. I'm start off by having a look at Machete on Blu-ray. Then we have the top 10 movie charts. Look at the new cinema releases, including Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. New DVD releases, including Cowboys and Aliens and Final Destination 5. And some film news. So we start off with Machete on Blu-ray. And Machete begins with our titular hero, played by Danny Trejo, as one of two federal agents striving to rescue a hot girl from the clutches of her kidnappers because she's a witness against Rogelio Torres, Steven Seagal, a drug kingpin who is as evil as they come and must spend a fortune in hair dye. However, it doesn't quite go to plan, leaving his partner riddled full of bullets and Machete stabbed in the balls. While he lies there on the floor, writhing in agony, Torres appears, revealing he's also kidnapped our hero's wife, who promptly loses her head to a samurai sword swipe. 3 years later, Machete is working on a labour site, where Mexicans are hired by the day for manual work. Enter Agent Sartana, Jessica Alba, an immigration agent on the US-Mexico border for ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, investigating illegal aliens, starting with suspecting there's an operation being run by taco girl Luz, Michelle Rodriguez. Just what are her connections with the network and the defiance of the Border Patrol? Meanwhile, there's no-nonsense vigilante Von, Don Johnson, working with Texas Senator John McLaughlin, Robert De Niro, who's running for re-election to office on a ticket of stamping out anyone illegal and with rather underhand means. The copious cast is extended further with the mysterious man, Michael Booth, Jeff Fahey, who offers Machete $150,000 to kill off the senator. What follows next is something you'll have to find out for yourself, but it also includes Lindsay Lohan as April, Booth's drug-addicted daughter, and she'll appear later in a nude scene along with Alicia Merrick, who plays her mum, June. To say how things play out would definitely be a spoiler, but for me this is such a lot of violent, over-the-top nonsense. And it goes together perfectly. I love it. At first you don't know if it's a film within a film, given the spoof-like way it plays out with an intentionally scratchy picture during the opening scene that I described above. But that soon disappears once we speed forward to the present day. Every member of the cast plays their part perfectly, including Cheech Marin as local padre and brother to Machete. And for a film that with such a dumb presence and a whole heap of overacting, this could really have fallen flat, but Ethan Mankiewicz and Robert Rodriguez capture the mood of the piece perfectly, and you have a solid near 2 hours of entertainment. Oh, and Jessica Alba also appears nude in the shower at one point, but sadly with body positions, you can't see her lady bumps or fufu. Presented in the original theatrical ratio and in 1080p high definition, the picture is sharp and beautifully detailed. I like my speech. There's close-ups aplenty on most of the cast's faces, and with the addition of the hot and seedy Mexican desert landscape, this Blu-ray disc gets many chances to show off the excellent quality of the mastering. It's flawless. The sound is in DTS 5.1 HD Master Audio, for which I got the 5.1 DTS version, so I've not got the HD equipment, audio-wise. Throwing gunshots, explosions, action scenes, and dialogue in hushed, gruff tones on a liberal basis, and you have a very engaging audio track here. The extras, however, are not a lot to shout about. First up is a series of trailers, and oddly, rather than bring up a selection of separate trailers to click on, they all follow one into another, which is incredibly irritating. First up is a general Sony Blu-ray trailer, then movie trailers for The Green Hornet, Faster, Priest, and Rodriguez's directorial debut El Mariachi, plus Once Upon a Time in Mexico. How about a trailer for Machete? No. Next up comes 11 deleted and extended scenes for about 12 minutes long, including one with Jessica Alba playing her own twin, which is a nice little addition but would add nothing to the plot if put back into the film. None of these are particularly crying to be put back in, but I like the cool style of the one with the hitmen. The extras are complete with an audience reaction track. What on earth is this? It's just a canned crowd whooping and hollering like a BBC sitcom, telling us where to laugh. Whoever thought this one up at Sony, just don't. It's the worst idea ever. Apparently there are more extras on BD Live, but I never got this to work in the past. Just Sony, just stick them on the disc and stop faffing about. Okay, the scores on the doors. We've got film is 8 out. I'll get that 8 out of 10. The picture 10. Sound 8. Extras 1. Overall 7 out of 10. So worth. Yeah, I mean, it's a brilliant film. Certainly worth a rental. If you know, just in terms of a purchase, well, the extras are rubbish. So if you really like the film, then you know it's worth a purchase. Okay, that's the film review done, dusted. And in a moment we'll be having a look at the top 10 movie charts. But first of all, have a bit of music from Travis and Turn. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Travis with Turn. And you're at Live on Manchester's 106.6 with the DVD Fever Show, me, Don Robinson. In this section, we'll have a look at the top 10 movie charts. And I go through the US movie charts here, as I can never find a reliable source for the UK ones, with the Internet Movie Database being particularly hit and miss, and the Rotten Tomatoes side was just never ideal. But anyway, the top 10 movie charts. At number one, we've got New Year's Eve, which took $13 million. And on New Year's Eve, Vice President of the Times Square Alliance, Claire Morgan, Hilary Swank, is making the final arrangements for the ball drop, who her misses, with the help of her friend Brandon, Chris Ludacris Bridges. Meanwhile, after nearly being run over by a car and denied a vacation, Aaron Records Secretary Ingrid, Michelle Pfeiffer, quits her job and offers the delivery man Paul, Zac Efron, tickets for the Aaron Records Masquerade Ball, if Paul helps her complete a series of New Year's resolutions before midnight, which she accepts. Paul's sister Kim, Sarah Jessica Parker, is having trouble with a teenage daughter Hayley, Abigail Breslin, who wants to spend New Year's Eve with her friends and her crush Seth at Times Square. Paul's roommate, comic book illustrator Randy, Ashton Kutcher, who hates New Year's Eve after his girlfriend left him on a date, gets stuck in an elevator with Delise, Lea Michele, an aspiring singer who will be providing backup for musician Jensen, John Bon Jovi, in his show at the Aaron Records Ball, where he rekindles his feelings for his ex-girlfriend Laura, Catherine Heigl. Are you keeping up with all this? At nearby hospital, Stan Harris, Robert De Niro, a man in the final stages of cancer who refuses chemotherapy and only wishes to see the ball drop one last time, is kept company by nurse Amy, Halle Berry, after his doctor, Carrie Elwes, reveals he will not last much longer. In the same hospital, a young couple, Griffin, Seth Meyers, and Tess, Jessica Biel, about to have their first child, competes with another couple, James, Till Schweiger, and Sarah Paulson, for a bonus offered for the family of the first child born in the new year. Elsewhere, Sam, Josh Duhamel, a businessman from Aaron Records, attempts to arrive at the ball where he is to deliver an important speech, after his car malfunctions on the other side of New York, all while wondering if he should attend a meeting with a mysterious woman he met and fell in love with on the previous New Year's Eve. And so it goes on. There's lots of different intertwining stories here, all from famous names, but based on the trailer, this is no Magnolia. It's taken me a long time to get to say it, but just avoid it, basically. I think you've heard enough right there anyway. Number two, we've got The Sitter, which took $9.85 million. And Noah, Jonah Hill, is a college student who has been suspended and now lives with his mum. After having a disagreement with his mother, he's jawed into taking a babysitting job caring for the kids of Mrs. Padula, the stern and studious Slater, Max Records, no-nonsense wild child Blythe, Landry Bender. What sort of a name is that? Landry Bender. Anyway. And the pyromaniac exchange student Rodrigo, Kevin Hernandez. Soon, Noah is invited to a party to have sex with his girlfriend, Ari Graynor, and he soon becomes entangled with two psychopathic drug dealers and a wild chase through Manhattan. Well, I was expecting nothing from this knockabout comedy, but the trailer hits the right mark at every turn with great comic timing. It certainly looks well worth a watch when it comes out over here. Number three, we've got The Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1. In the highly anticipated next chapter of the blockbuster The Twilight Saga, the newfound married bliss of Bella Swan, Kristen Stewart, and vampire Edward Cullen, Robert Pattinson, is cut short when a series of betrayals and misfortunes threatens to destroy their world. After their wedding, Bella and Edward travel to Rio de Janeiro for their honeymoon, where they finally give in to their passions. Bella soon discovers she's pregnant, and during a nearly fatal childbirth, Edward finally fulfills her wish to become immortal. But the arrival of their remarkable daughter, Renesmee, sets off an emotional, perilous change of events that pits the Cullens and their allies against the Volturi, the fearsome council of vampire leaders setting the stage for an all-out battle. Well, I've never seen a Twilight film in my life, and nor do I have the inclination to do so. In this trailer, man turns into wolf just as Bella is about to marry her man. But let's face it, it's not going to change anything. If you love the Twilight books and films and are probably a teenage girl, then you'll see this regardless of what I say. The end. Number 4, we got the Muppets. And when three Muppet fans learn that Tex Richmond wants to drill under the Muppet Theatre for oil, Gary, Mary and Walter set out to find the Muppets who have been split up for years. Kermit lives in his own mansion, depressed in Hollywood. Gonzo is a high-class plumber at Gonzo's Royal Flush. Fozzie performs with a tribute band called the Muppets. Miss Piggy is a plus-size fashion editor at Vogue Paris. An Animal is a celebrity anger management rehab centre in Santa Barbara. Starring Jason Segel from Bad Teacher, Amy Adams, the fighter, Chris Cooper, the Bourne Identity, plus Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy. From the trailer, this looks immensely pointless. Number 5, we've got Arthur Christmas. Number 6, we've got Hugo, which directed by Martin Scorsese, and featuring Ben Kingsley, Ray Winston, Christopher Lee, Sacha Baron Cohen and Emily Mortimer. This is Scorsese's first venture into 3D. And it looks like it'll make a decent family film, but it's too sickly sweet and childish for my taste. Number 8, we've got The Descendants. It's number 7, The Descendants, rather. Number 8, Happy Feet 2, which... Well, I won't be watching it, as it's another kids' film in CGI. It just feels weird that the director of the Mad Max films is making kids' animations. Number 9, we've got Jack and Jill, which is basically Adam Sandler playing both himself and himself as a girl. He's also stars Dana Carvey, Rob Schneider, and lots of cameos, including Al Pacino, Johnny Depp, and Shaquille O'Neal. The premise where he comes to his own house as his identical twin sister for Thanksgiving, it just sounds an utterly appalling premise, and after watching the trailer, I can confirm that it is. And number 10, we have The Immortals. Okay, so that's your top 10 movie charts. In a moment, we have a look at new cinema releases out over Christmas and New Year. But first, I have a bit of Christmas music. I'll have Chris de Burgh, A Spaceman Came Travelling. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Chris de Burgh with The Spaceman Came Travelling, and you're back live at Manchester's 106.6 with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And in this section we'll have a look at the new cinema releases out over Christmas and New Year. We're going to start with Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which is out on Boxing Day. A terrorist bombing destroys the Kremlin, whilst the IMF agent Ethan Hunt is carrying out an undercover operation in Moscow. The Russian government categorises the attack as an undeclared act of war, prompting United States government to initiate a black operation known as Ghost Protocol, disavowing the entire Mission Impossible force again. Hunt and his four-person team are allowed to escape from the government's custody as part of a plan to enable them to operate outside of their agency's command structure. However, when the IMF is ambushed, they are forced to operate without any kind of official support in an attempt to locate an intelligence source connected to the Moscow bombing and the attack on the IMF. Starring Tom Cruise, as always, plus Jeremy Renner, Simon Pegg, Michael Nyquist, and Ving Rhames in an uncredited performance. Or is it Ving Rhames? I don't know. The trailer makes it look amazing. But on the other hand, Cruise has long hair again. And out of the previous films in the series, only the second one featured him with long hair, and that was the only rubbish one, while number 1 and 3 were brilliant. So that's out on Boxing Day. Also out on Boxing Day, we've got The Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. This is the second film to be adapted from the Swedish novel of the same name by Stieg Larsson. The first film was the original Swedish language adaptation from 2009. This is the American remake written by Steve Zalian and directed by David Fincher. Daniel Craig stars as Mikael Blomkvist, with Rooney Mara starring as Lisbeth Salander. In essence, the film follows a man's mission to find out what has happened to the girl who has been missing for 36 years and may have been murdered. Now, the fast-paced trailer doesn't give much away, as there's no dialogue to it, and I've not yet seen any of the original trilogy. I've been more of a mind to give it a go. start again. I'd be more of a mind to go and watch those instead. If you've seen them, let me know what you think on the Facebook page. You can also see all the trailers for everything here as well. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Also out, this will be on the, what day is this one out? The December the 30th, we have The Artist. It's 1927, and we meet silent movie star George Valentin, Jean Dujardin, on top of the world. He's behind the screen, in front of an ecstatic audience, who are enthralled by his latest starring role. As the credits roll, Valentin takes the stage for what a virtuosic display of bowing, his canine sidekick performing some cute tricks too. Outside the theatre, adoring fans impress, push and surge to breathe the same air as their hero. A pretty young girl at the front of the crowd drops her wallet and makes the most of it, picking it up to slip under the security cordon. The silence as Valentin looks shocked, confused, angry even. But it's all his joke, and laughing at his own power to create such confusion, he gamely poses for photos with the young lady to the delight of the assembled press, and to the chagrin of his stern, world-weary wife who reads of the escapade in the papers the next day. We didn't have breaking news in them days, did you? Young girl, one Peppy Miller, Berenice Bejo, we learn having shared a moment with our hero, is inspired to follow his path and turns up at the studio to audition, successfully as an extra. Valentin himself arrives at the same studio, where he again is a star, this time of A German Affair. On entering the studio, the star is enthralled by a pair of legs he sees rehearsing on the other side of the screen. He joins the dance from his side of the screen and beckons the set builders to remove the screen, hoping to surprise the girl. It's he, though, who's surprised to discover that the legs belong to the same Peppy Miller from last night's crowd and this morning's papers. Now, there's another dialogue-free trailer here, and I'm not sure if I really get this. I don't really go in for period films, but it has had a fair bit of publicity, given that such films are few and far between these days, so possibly worth a watch. It's also got The Lady. Now, this is out on December 30th. And The Lady is an epic love story about how an extraordinary couple and family sacrifice their happiness at great human cost for a higher cause. This is a story of Aung San Suu Kyi and her husband, Michael Harris. Despite distance, long separations, and a dangerously hostile regime, the love endures until the very end. A story of devotion and human understanding set against a background of political turmoil which continues today. The Lady also is the story of the peaceful quest of the woman who is at the core of Burma's democracy movement. Starring Michelle Yeoh as Aung San Suu Kyi, and with a cast including David Thewlis, Jonathan Raggett, Jonathan Woodhouse, Susan Woolridge, and Benedict Wong, obviously Aung San Suu Kyi is an understandably high-profile woman, and this is based on a true story, but even though she's only come out from house arrest relatively recently, the whole thing is a bit off my radar to want to watch a film about it, quite frankly. Also out, just after New Year, we've got The Iron Lady, it's out on January the 6th. And again, all the trailers for all these are on the Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Now, The Iron Lady tells the story of a woman who smashed through the barriers of gender and class to be heard in a male-dominated world. The story concerns power and the price that is paid for power, and is a surprising and insightful portrait of an extraordinary and complex woman. It stars Meryl Streep as Margaret Thatcher, plus a sizeable cast including Alexandra Roach as a teenage Thatcher, Jim Broadbent as Dennis Thatcher, Harry Lloyd as a young Dennis Thatcher, Olivia Colman as Carol Thatcher, Anthony Head as Geoffrey Howe, Richard E. Grant as Michael Heseltine, that'd be interesting, Paul Bentley as Douglas Hurd, Robin Kermode as John Major, I wonder if it's any relation to Mark, John Sessions as Edward Heath, getting more portly as the days go on, Roger Allam as Gordon Rees, and Roger Allam also plays the leader of the opposition in The Thick of It, which is coming back next year as well, so that'll be good. Michael Pennington as Michael Foote, and Reginald Green as Ronald Reagan. Now, as somebody who's growing up while Thatcher was in power, I might have a look at this, actually. I can still remember the day she left Number 10, and a fair bit of the story has been documented relatively recently in a BBC 4 drama with Andrea Riseborough, superb as a young Thatcher, and with Rory Kinnear as Dennis. The trailer looks fairly intriguing, and I didn't think Meryl Streep could pull it off, but she can from the looks of this. Okay, so that's the... it's all the films that are out over Christmas and New Year. I know we're having the DVDs and Blu-rays that are out over Christmas and New Year, starting with Cowboys and Aliens, but we'll have a bit more bit of music first. I think I'll dedicate this one to my power supply of my PC, which I had to replace. It very nearly stopped you from hearing this show, quite frankly. I'm going to dedicate this song to that piece of machinery that's now sitting in the front room floor. It's a song by Kings of Convenience called Failure. So it's 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Kings of Convenience with Failure. And you're live from Manchester 106.6. And back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. Now, in this section where we have a look at the, instead of just the DVDs out over this week, we'll have a look at the ones out over Christmas and New Year. Starting with Cowboys and Aliens. Now, it's the Old West where a lone cowboy leads an uprising against a terror from beyond our world. 1873, Arizona Territory. A stranger with no memory of his past stumbles into the hard desert town of Absolution. The only hint to his history is a mysterious shackle that encircles one wrist. What he discovers is that the people of Absolution don't welcome strangers, and nobody makes a move on its streets unless ordered to do so by the iron-fisted Colonel Dollarhide, Harrison Ford. It's a town that lives in fear, but Absolution is about to experience fear it can scarcely comprehend as the desolate city is attacked by marauders from the sky. Screaming down with breathtaking velocity and blinding lights to abduct the helpless one by one, the monsters challenge everything the residents have ever known. Now the stranger they rejected is their only hope for salvation. As this gunslinger slowly starts to remember who he is and where he's been, he realises he holds a secret that could give the town a fighting chance against the alien force. With the help of the elusive traveller, Ella, or Olivia Wilde, he pulls together a posse comprised of former opponents, townsfolk, Dollarhide and his boys, outlaws, and Apache warriors, all in danger of annihilation. United against a common enemy, they will prepare for an epic showdown for survival. The cast stars Daniel Craig, Clancy Brown, Sam Rockwell, and Keith Carradine, and from the trailer, what starts off looking like a typical Wild West film soon changes halfway through when the aliens arrive and start shooting up the place. Not quite sure whether it will work as a whole, though. Also out, we've got Final Destination 5. Now, the film opens with co-workers gathering together for a company retreat. Sam Lawton has prepared the breakfast before the bus ride. His best friend Peter is awaiting everyone else's arrival for the trip. Molly Harper, Sam's girlfriend, arrives, and she then breaks up with him, due to his dreams of going to Paris to be an apprentice for his mentor. Meanwhile, Peter's girlfriend, Candice, is an intern for the company, and a gymnast comes along with rival Olivia Castle. Molly is hit on by Isaac Palmer, a co-worker and womanizer. Sam then goes to the construction wing of the building to find his other friend, Nathan Gregory, a supervisor who has a hard time dealing with construction worker Roy. Nathan and Sam regroup and head on the bus to their destination, and as the bus heads up to the bridge, Sam notices the road's construction is rather suspicious, and he begins to have weird feelings while on the bus. The bus is stopped by a traffic operator, and then the bridge starts to crack. Sam watches as each of the co-workers dies, excluding Molly, who reaches safety. Sam then comes to, realizing that the incident has yet to occur. He and Molly leave the bus, and Peter, Candice, Olivia, Nathan and Isaac and Dennis follow. The bridge collapses, and Sam rushes all of his friends to safety. Well, you know what will come next. I haven't even seen the fourth film yet, which was entitled The Final Destination, so they clearly lied. And there's no one famous in the cast other than Tony Todd, again. Watching the trailer, it does look like a great deal of fun, though, so I'll be sure to catch up with number four before seeing this. Also out, we've got Apollo 18, and in December 1974, the Department of Defense contacts the crew of the previously cancelled Apollo 18 mission to inform them that the mission is a go, though it has been deemed top secret. Commander Nathan Walker, Lieutenant Colonel John Gray, and Captain Benjamin Anderson are launched towards the moon, ostensibly to collect moon rocks, but their given mission is to place detectors to alert the United States of any impending ICBM attacks from the USSR. Gray remains in orbit while aboard Freedom, while Walker and Anderson land on the moon in the lunar module Liberty. While planting one of the detectors, the pair take samples of strange rocks. While attempting to sleep, the pair hear noises outside and a camera captures a small rock moving nearby. Houston claims the noises are interference from the ICBM detectors. Anderson finds a rock sample on the floor of Liberty despite having secured the samples. During further exploration, they discover footprints that lead them to a Soviet LK lander nearby. finding it functional but bloodstained. Anderson follows tracks leading to a dark crater and finds a dead cosmonaut. Walker queries Houston about the Soviet presence, but is rebuffed, told only to continue with the mission. The film is shot in the mockumentary found footage style, supposedly of the lost footage of the Apollo 18 mission that was only recently discovered. Now, it's difficult to know from the trailer whether this is worth seeing. Again, all the trailers are on their Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. The trailer builds up suspense, but I'm not sure it really works as a whole. The cast list doesn't feature anyone famous, so that may help in terms of not knowing which characters might come off better than the rest. It'll be interesting to see how it fares at the box office, though, and it only costs an estimated $5 million to make, so it's already eclipsed that. However, it reportedly takes around 3 times the budget for a film to see a profit once you take marketing into account. Even so, we're over halfway there. Now, also out is A Lonely Place to Die. A group of 5 mountaineers are hiking and climbing in the Scottish Highlands when they discover a young Serbian girl buried in a small chamber of the wilderness. They become caught in a terrifying game of cat and mouse with the kidnappers as they try to get the girl to safety. In April 2011, the movie has had its world premiere at Action Fest Film Festival in Asheville, USA, where it was awarded Best Film and Director. After heavy interest at the Cannes film market in May, Kaleidoscope Entertainment picked up all UK rights to release the film, and it's their widest release to date. The film then had its UK premiere on August 29th, where it closed Fright Fest 2011. Starring Melissa George, Ed Spielers, Eamon Walker, Sean Harris, Alec Newman, Carol Roden and Kate McGowan, from the trailer it looks like it could go either way in terms of how good the film is, but I think it looks worth a shot. Then we also have The Killing Series 2, and the emergency services receive a chilling phone call from a distraught man unable to find his wife. Reports later reveal that the woman was stabbed 21 times in a fatal attack, and Sarah Lunt is recalled by Lennart Brix. In the gripping return of the BAFTA award-winning series, Sarah Lunt returns to Copenhagen to investigate a savage murder where an ex-soldier who served in Afghanistan is savagely killed. Parallel to Lund, both the Minister of Justice and an escaped convict are also desperately searching for the murderer. They are the protagonists of a twisting tale of top-level cover-ups, betrayals and lies set in a time of fear, that of Islamic terrorism. There's also a box set which features Series 1. Now, I haven't seen either series yet, and it's the kind of thing I've got Series 1 ready to watch, and I keep meaning to get round to it, but I just haven't yet, obviously, otherwise I wouldn't be saying that I hadn't. But I do hear it's brilliant, though, so, yeah, I should get around to watching it. Other new movies out over Christmas and New Year, we've got Deadheads, The Devil's Double with Dominic Cooper, Elite Squad, The Enemy Within, Faces in the Crowd, Kill List, that looks really good, actually, The King of Fighters, Lethal Justice, Pedro Almodovar, The Ultimate Collection, there's 7 films there, including the other one that's out this week. Well, over Christmas, The Skin I Live In, and also The Tempest. Some TV series out, we've got Bad Girls Series 6, we've got The Borrowers, which is on Boxing Day, Burn Notice Season 4, Christmas at Downton Abbey, The Fade Series 1, Formula 1 Season Review 2011, Futurama Season 5, if you need a bit of exercise, we've got the Gillian Michaels box set, Ripped in 30, and Killer Buns and Thighs, Just Henry, Misfit Season 3, and The Slap Season 1. And I've also got a few Blu-ray premieres. We've got Frankenhooker, Ned Kelly, and Videodrome. Okay, so that's all your new DVD and Blu-ray releases out over the Christmas and New Year period. We'll have a bit of film news in a moment, but we'll have a bit of music in the meantime. We'll have Enya and Orinoco Flow, which reminds me of a particular scene at the end of episode 5 of Peep Show. I can't describe it given that it's lunchtime now, but if you've seen it, episode 5 of the first series of Peep Show, you'll know exactly what I mean. Anyway, here we have a bit of Enya. It's 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Enya with Orinoco Flow, and you're back live on Manchester's 106.6. It's a DVD Fever show with me, Don Robinson. And this last section to take us up to the top of the hour, we have a bit of film news. Starting with the news that there's one more minor bit of casting news for Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained, as it gears up to start rolling very, very soon. Adelaide Now reveals that the self-described international jazz diva, Aussie Catherine Lambert, is coming aboard the film, having been hand-picked by the director. "I'm not sure about the corsets, but I'm really looking forward to this experience," she told the paper, while also revealing how she landed in Tarantino's orbit. "I met and sang karaoke with Quentin Tarantino when I went to LA in 2004 for the DVD launch of Lost in Translation." She probably doesn't sound like that, but you know. Then again, I once wrote into Points of View and they just made a voice which was nothing like mine, so there you go. Okay, anything seem familiar yet? Fans of Sofia Coppola's Lost in Translation might remember that Lambert is featured as a lounge singer in the hotel, crooning away through a handful of songs. No word yet on a role here, but it's probably a safe assumption she'll take on a similar part as some kind of entertainer. So yeah, probably a small part, but no doubt anyone would jump at the chance to spend time on a set that will include folks like Leonardo DiCaprio, Samuel L. Jackson, Jamie Foxx, Christoph Waltz, Sacha Baron Cohen, and many, many more. Filming kicks off soon with a movie set for a Christmas Day release in 2012. There's also the news that Spike Lee's inside man, Clive Owen, has been offered the villain role in Oldboy. Though Colin Firth turned it down, it seems the filmmakers behind the brewing Oldboy remake are still keen on having a Brit play the baddie, and are reaching out to someone who has worked with the director Spike Lee once before. Twitch reports that Clive Owen, who starred in Lee's last big box office hit, Inside Man, is now being eyed to turn the screws on Josh Brolin in the upcoming film. You know the drill by now. The movie's a remake of Park Chan-wook's awesome movie, with screenwriter Mark Bratislavich also turning to the manga to help with the Hollywood version. Producer Roy Lee has also boldly proclaimed this version will feature new characters and will be darker than the original. There is also the role of the female lead to be cast. It was sent over to Rooney Mara, but the actress turned it down. We also have the news that there's a new Avatar special edition to hit iTunes with a multi-layered look at effects. Get ready for, as if we must, have one more special edition of James Cameron's blockbuster film Avatar. See if it hasn't made enough money already. In an unusual move, however, this is not a disc-based release. Instead, Fox has teamed up with Apple to release an iTunes special edition that will allow viewers to instantly change the view of the film between the original green screen footage, rough CGI overlays, and the final version. A lot of the sort of footage that this promises might be the stuff you've seen before. This may be a novel way to present it all at once. Given the degree to which many of us enjoy seeing the work in progress version of movies, especially when they reveal the process of converting raw footage into a very polished final version, this might be of more interest to you than your typical special edition re-release. The downside is that it doesn't sound like you'll be able to watch the entire movie with those multi-layered views. As the press release says, viewers can deconstruct some of the movie's most memorable scenes to reveal how James Cameron applied special effects to create the breathtaking world of Pandora. The Avatar iTunes Extra Special Edition is released on December the 20th, and it's going to be in the US for a price of $20 for HD and $15 for SD. Whether it comes over in the UK is yet to be seen. Okay, so that's everything to do with films, and coming up in the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with a review of Battlefield 3 on the Xbox 360. But to take us there, we'll have a bit of music from Queens of the Stone Age and The Lost Art of Keeping a Secret. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was A Flock of Seagulls and Wishing I Had a Photograph of You, and that one goes out to Becky Barrett in Stockport. And this second hour of the DVD Fever show with me, Don Robinson, back on Manchester's 106.6, we have a look at video games, featuring a review of Battlefield 3 on the Xbox 360, the top 10 games charts with some new video games releases, and if I've got time for it, also some video games news. Because in the TV section, we're going to be having a look back at there's Black Mirror, there's also the British Comedy Awards that was on. And what else was on? Steve Jobs, Billion Dollar Man, and also a program called Class Dismissed. Was that any good? Well, only one way to find out. Let's carry on listening. Anyway, starting with a review of Battlefield 3 on the Xbox 360. It's 2014, and in Battlefield 3, there are a number of baddies forming a hostile militia known as the PLR, and you, as Staff Sergeant Henry Blackburn, have to take your five-man squad on a mission to Tehran to wipe out the leader, al-Bashir. While checking out the underground of the target's location, you come across some Russian nukes that the PLR obtained. However, two out of the three are missing. Now, I'm not going to reveal any more of the plot because, A, like a film, you should really let it play out without being spoiled, and B, you know you don't care much for the plot and you just want to get around to killing some baddies. The game is basically a very linear first-person shooter with some Bourne conspiracy-style button-bashing and set in a modern-day battlefield, with you starting off as Blackburn, a member of the US Marine Corps 1st Reconnaissance Battalion, and as the game's main protagonist. Now, I was pleased with the quick reloading times after you die, and also the gorgeous graphics, especially in some outdoor scenes like the opening of the Going Hunting mission on the deck of an aircraft carrier. However, you can't see them properly in a number of dark scenes during the game, thus losing it some points. I know you're meant to be doing a lot of this under the cover of darkness, but in reality it just drives you batty, as you can't see what you're doing and the game's overall visual effect is completely diminished. Some things that annoyed me about the game: it does feel rather bitty as you play it. Run here and fight for a bit, then run there and fight for a bit more, and so on. It just feels more like a series of set pieces than a game with a plot as a whole. I also accidentally stood up a few times when I was meant to stay back down, as I wasn't sure if I was proning. Which isn't rude, it means you're crouching along the ground as you go. The Going Hunting mission, where you're flying in a fighter jet, feels completely uninvolving. You just point your joypad out about a bit, fire a missile when you think you're aiming correctly, and then strike while the iron is hot, so to speak. And it either destroys the enemy plane, or they deploy some countermeasures and fend off your weapon. And that's not a euphemism. So you shoot another at them and generally destroy them at that point. It's very similar in the next part of the mission when you have to aim at a few targets on the ground and fire Scud missiles at them. Point, shoot, or rather aim, and then let a flypast of other fighters raise the baddies to the ground. In this section you play as Lieutenant Jennifer Colby Hawkins, an FA-18 NFO naval flight officer, responsible for manning her aircraft's weapon systems. And generally you often feel disconnected while playing Battlefield 3. It's just not involving in general. Oh, and there was a weird moment during this section, Mission Uprising, about around 10.5 minutes in, where I just got stuck. Now, obviously, you can't see that here, listening to the radio, but if you go to the... I'll put a link to the game footage on, but on the Facebook page. But, on my DVD Fever Games YouTube channel, you'll see there's a few videos there for Battlefield 3. So that one's in Mission Uprising. Now, something stupid comes in the form of Peter's reaction to the game, in which a scene where you're prompted to kill a rat came under fire. Peter claimed the game treats animals in a sadistic manner, and that it can have a brutalising effect on the young male target audience. They are clearly idiots. They should see my young nephew playing Grand Theft Auto 4. He shoots everyone in sight, yet has never killed a rat in his life. Besides, kids shouldn't really be playing or watching this game, that's why it has a 16 rating. And I'm a single-player guy, but when it comes to multiplayer, the matches allow you to take on one of four roles: Assault, Support, Engineer and Recon. The Assault class focuses on assault rifles and healing teammates. The Support class focuses on LMGs and supplying ammunition. The Engineer class focuses on supporting and destroying vehicles. And the Recon class focuses on sniping and spotting enemies. There's also several game modes present, including Conquest, Rush, Squad Deathmatch, Squad Rush, and for the first time since Battlefield 1942, Team Deathmatch. Overall, the scores on the doors, I'll give this one graphics and sound 8, playability 7, enjoyment 6, overall 7. So yeah, it's alright, but it could be better. Now, in a moment, we'll have a look at the top 10 games charts, but I think we're going to have a bit of music, and we're going to have, what should I have? I think, let's have a bit of Christmas music, and we'll have, what should we have? Have a look. I think we'll have a bit of Squeeze now, a bit of Squeeze instead. We're going to have Squeeze and Is That Love. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Squeeze and Is That Love. And you're back on the DVD Fever Show, live from Manchester's 106.6, with me, Don Robinson. Now, in this section, we'll have a look at the top 10 games charts. And I think I'm going to run this. Well, we've got the new video games releases coming out as well. And I think I'll run into this. The video games news that comes next. because there's quite a lot to fit into this hour rather than have an extra song in there. So the top 10 games charts, and we start off at number 1 with The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. Number 2, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Number 3, Just Dance 3 Special Edition. Number 4, FIFA 12. Number 5, Assassin's Creed Revelations. Number 6, Battlefield 3, which you just heard the review for. Number 7 again, it's Professor Layton and the Spectre's Call. Number 8, Saints Row the 3rd. Number 9, Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception. And number 10, Mario Kart 7. And now, what's new this week? Well, actually, a couple of re-entries at number 28 for GoldenEye Reloaded. Number 36 for Gran Turismo 5. And a new entry at 39 for Rayman Origins. I've got some new video games releases coming out on Friday. Well, in fact, these are going to be sort of over Christmas and New Year, really. And there's not a lot, you know. All the big games have come out, haven't they? So we've got only got a couple. We've got Boom Street on the Wii. Get on board, corner the market, and make a fortune. Players become familiar characters from the Nintendo and Dragon Quest universes in a board game that challenges them to play the real estate and stock markets wisely to win. Players race around the board, trying to accumulate wealth and hit a target value. Sounds like Monopoly. Or buying, selling and trading property with friends and family to see who can be the first to cash out. Sounding just like Monopoly. What appears at first to be a simple property buying board game offers multiple levels of money maximising opportunity. Pretty much like Monopoly. It features that players can move around one of more than 15 boards, well it's 14 more than you get with Monopoly, buying shops to build their portfolios and collecting symbols that they can cash in at the bank to earn more gold to invest. It takes money to make money, so racing around the board may not be the best strategy. Sounds like you don't go to jail like Monopoly. I've said Monopoly too much now. Other board games are available. To capitalise on their monetary games, players can make investments, play the stock market, purchase shops and collect shopping fees. When players buy multiple shops adjacent to one another, their property value grows and both shops level up. Other players who land on those squares also have to pay an increased shopping fee. Players can choose to play as a variety of Mushroom Kingdom characters, as Dragon Quest characters, or even their own Mii characters. And the beginner setting called Easy Rules helps newcomers learn the basics, while the more advanced Standard Rules introduces more challenges, deeper strategy options, and the ability to play the virtual stock market. You can also play against friends with the Nintendo Wi-Fi connection. There's also a game called Octomania. Mysterious falling octopi are smothering everything in their path with their slimy tentacles, and only you can stop them. Octomania is a puzzle game featuring an exciting blend of compelling fast-paced gameplay, colourful upbeat graphics, my voice is going, and truly hilarious storylines, it says here. The simple yet addictive octo-bashing gameplay features a fantastic story mode, family-friendly multiplayer modes, time challenges, and 12 of the funniest playable characters you've ever seen, each with their own special moves to master. You'd be a sucker to miss it. Encounter weird and wonderful foes in your mission to free Lonropia of Octopi. Story mode features multiple stages with cunning opponents, while arcade offers a quick blast of octo-smashing action. There's a local split-screen multiplayer for 2-4 players, plus fast-paced Nintendo Wi-Fi connection multiplayer mode for 2 players. There's feature-packed gameplay that's easy to learn and tough to master. Use combo chains and special attacks to triumph across multiple difficulty levels. Tutorial mode makes simple rules even easier to follow, so that all the family can pick up and play. And now, yes, let's move on straight to the video games news. We start off with the news that the Capcom Digital Collection bundles 8 Xbox Live hits, Xbox Live arcade hits, all in one package. And these are 8 titles previously only available through Xbox Live Arcade. We've got 1942 Joint Strike, Bionic Commando Rearm 2, Final Fight Double Impact, Flock, Rocket Man Axis of Evil, Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix, and Wolf of the Battlefield Commando 3. Of the 8 games, Final Fight Double Impact actually includes 2 classic arcade games, Final Fight and Magic Sword. Rocketman Axis of Evil will also include the Rocketman. It came from Uranus expansion. Sounds a bit painful. Each game will retain all online features, leaderboards and achievements from their downloadable versions. Surprisingly missing from the collection is Bionic Commando Rearmed, a an absence that will be felt by fans since its sequel will be included. The Capcom Digital Collection will be available on Xbox 360 at retail in spring 2012. It will be priced at $40 in North America, but no European price has been announced as of yet. It's also the news that a Modern Warfare 3 player has faced a 14-year ban. He's been basically permanently banned from playing the game, according to developers Infinity Ward. Community strategist Robert Bowling said that players risk being perma-banned for doing something bad, with one user being unable to access the game for 5,000 days, or just over 13 and a half years. Sounds a bit like what Deep Thought might pan out in or dish out in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Bowling later told the user on Twitter that bans were issued for a number of serious issues: boosting, cheating, hacking, exploiting, inappropriate behaviour, such as racial slurs and abusive language. These are all based on reports in-game. Over 1,600 players were banned following similar tactics less than 2 weeks after its November the 11th launch. Modern Warfare 3 was recently named as the fastest-selling piece of entertainment, beating Avatar to the $1 billion sales mark. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 was released for the Xbox 360, PS3 and PC on November the 8th. We've also got the news that Kinect Sports Season 2 will be given a new downloadable content. The Maple Lakes Golf Pack will add 9 new holes to the golf part of the game, allowing a full 18-hole match to take place. The new courses feature forts, marinas, coves and causeways with hidden routes and opportunities to secure several holes in one. As well as the courses, the pack features new achievements and 9 new challenges in online and offline play. It will also launch alongside a title update that will see challenge play notifications sent through email, results will be posted to Facebook, and the chance to use video chat during Xbox Live matches. Further downloadable content will be available every month through to next spring, and the Maple Lakes Golf Pack will launch on December 20th today for 400 Microsoft points, which is about £3.40. I also bit the news that the Gears of War 3 Christmas multiplayer events have been revealed. These are the 12 days of Gearsmas, which will see new versus playlist. We can basically play them now. We've got Talk Bow Tag, Hardcore Weekend, Thanksgiving, and One Shot One Kill. They're amongst the event types will be available in the days running up to Christmas. 3 ribbons for the event will be spaced out across 12 days, with more surprises teased over the period. It was added that all playlists are subject to change. Gears of War 3 will see new campaign content, Ram's Shadow, out now for 1,200 Microsoft points. Here's a schedule for the Gears of War 3 up to Christmas. Let's see if I can try and sing. We've got day 12 mortars incoming, 11 snowmen heads are popping, 10 lambent leaping, 8... 9 locusts, I can't count from 10 to 9. 9 locusts, ladies dancing. 8 experience for milking. 7 gibbing comets ringing. 6 boomers flaming. 5 beasts on the cheap. That's why I don't sing. 4 squawking birds. 3 much bigger heads. 2 no team love. And 1 fortifications for free. Yeah. I told you I couldn't sing, so, you got yourself to blame for listening. Okay, so there's the video games news for this week. And in a moment, we'll have a look at the TV programmes watched in the past week. We'll have a bit of music first, a bit of Christmas music. We'll have The Waitresses and Christmas Wrapping. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was The Waitresses with Christmas Wrapping. And you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6. Now, in this section, we'll be having a look at TV programmes watched in the past week. And I'm always a little bit behind with the Black Mirror episodes. And today's no exception. This is going to have a look at 15 Million Merits, which was the second episode. Now, it's set in a sarcastic version of a future reality. 15 Million Merits is a satire on entertainment shows and our insatiable thirst for distraction. In this world, everyone is confined to a life of strange physical drudgery. The only way to escape this life is to enter the hotshot talent show and pray you can impress the judges. Now, it started with Bing Manson waking up in a sealed black box. He brings up on the screen that his avatar has 15 million merit points. Little things like using toothpaste and skipping adverts on his TV cost a penalty, and you can't ignore them by closing your eyes either. Going to the gym to use the exercise bikes increases his merits. That cost $12 million to get into the X Factor style talent show Hot Shot, and Bing wants to gift $12 million of his to Abby Carner, a girl with a fantastic voice. When he goes to buy it, the price has gone up to 15 million merits. Hence the title. The judges on Hot Shot are Judge Wraith, Judge Hope, who's like Rupert Everett and her Simon Cowell guys, and Judge Charity, Julia Davis. And even though she sang brilliantly, it wasn't enough for the judges, who instead put her on the adult channel Wraith Babes, causing Bing to lose his mind because by then he didn't have enough merits to skip the advert for it, and also because he'd want to basically put her through. He took a shard of glass from one of the cracked screens in his pod and tried to carve the stamp off of his hand, which he had put on when entering Abby into the competition. In the end, he summed up enough credits again to enter, went on as an entertainer, and then threatened to kill himself live on air. He didn't, though, and just ended up as another TV presenter, this time with a staged piece to camera of him threatening to kill himself, until the end of it when he just said, "Same time next week," and then put the shard of glass in a box, and that was the end. It's weird, it wasn't just poor, it was pointless. This has all been done better with BBC Two's If Television Goes Down the Drain, where they had a reality show which resulted in one of the contestants killing themselves. This really wasn't a patch on the national anthem, the first episode, which was on the week before, and that was brilliant. Also on, we've had the British Comedy Awards, which was on last Friday. I mean, there were no outrageous moments this year. A few decent jokes from Jonathan Ross, but it was all rather a damp squib by comparison to most years. Even Ross commented as such during the show. Also, in the past week, we've had Steve Jobs, A Billion Dollar Man, which is a documentary looking at Apple, one of the biggest corporations in the world, fueled by game-changing products that tap into modern desires, and its leader Steve Jobs, who contributed to its success by fusing a Californian counterculture attitude and mastery of the art of hype with explosive advances in computer technology. Insiders, including Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, the chairman who ousted Jobs from the company he founded, and Jobs' chief of software, tell extraordinary stories of the rise and fall and rise again of Apple with Steve Jobs at its helm. With Stephen Fry, World Wide Web inventor Sir Tim Berners-Lee, and branding guru Rita Clifton, Evan Davis decodes the formula that took Apple from suburban garage to global supremacy. I started off with Jobs and Wozniak showing how they got together to create the Apple One, a circuit board which needed the customers to put it in their own case. Unfortunately, though, it was a rather dull documentary if you don't care about Steve Jobs. And if you live through the time when all this happened, you know what they're discussing anyway. Jobs went to Next and Pixar, and then came back to Apple to run it, and brought out the iMac. As one guy said, it was no better than the last big computer on the market, but thanks to Steve Jobs' marketing, it became the best-selling computer in a long time. The Apple Mac reinvented the mouse, as it was the first home computer to use a mouse. I remember wanting an Apple Mac Lisa when I was about 11, age of 9, 10, 11. But it cost about £7,000, or I think £700. Far too much for me anyway, on my pocket money, so I never got one. Anyway, the iMac reinvented the PC, and the iPod reinvented the MP3 player. The iPod kept its cachet and demandability, so to speak, by purposely undersupplying the numbers available. Next came the iPhone and the iPad, and Jobs' philosophy was, if I can fulfil all of your needs, I'll get all of your money. After admitting that he'd suffered and beaten pancreatic cancer, something that he would battle for the next 6 years instead of having surgery, Jobs tried alternative therapies against everyone's advice. So it's a sad end to it all, but a very good man who's very good at marketing, and that's basically all the documentary was. And then we also had Class Dismissed, which was came after that on Wednesday at BBC Two at 10 o'clock. It's official, class is back. Riots on the street, old Etonians in government, a workforce on strike, Downton Abbey, the King's Speech, the Royal Wedding, and the Jazzling. In this one-off special, Frank Skinner is joined by comedians Mickey Flanagan, Roisin Conaty, and Miles Jupp to assess whether class is still relevant in the 21st century. Probing analysis meets comedy chat as our comics become intrepid reporters examining the subject through their own unorthodox reports. The well-heeled Miles attempts to turn himself into a working-class hero, newly bourgeois Mickey asks why he still hates modern art, and salt-of-the-earth Roisin seeks love across the class divide. Frank and the team dissect their findings in front of a studio audience as they explore the funny side of class. Well, Class Dismissed was just Frank's opinionated programme and very little else. Yeah, I soon got bored of that one. The comedians tried to be comedians and it was all very predictable and scripted. I ditched it after 10 minutes. I just couldn't put up with any more, I'm afraid. Okay, so that's the programmes I watched in the past week. In a moment, we'll have a look at the programmes coming up over Christmas and New Year. We'll have a bit of music from Gomez and Whipping Piccadilly. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Gomez and Whipping Piccadilly. And you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, live on Manchester's 106.6. Now, in this last section, we're just having a look at the programmes that are coming up and, around Christmas and New Year. And I've not had a chance yet to watch Black Mirror, The Entire History of You, which is on Sunday. But if you've still not watched it yet, the basic premise is, in the near future, everyone has access to a memory implant that records everything they do, see and hear. Sort of Sky Plus for the brain. You need never forget a face again. But is that always a good thing? It stars Toby Kebbell, Jodie Whittaker and Tom Cullen. Everything else that's coming up, we've got Rev. Now, the final episode, we're usually on a Thursday, but final episode is on tonight on BBC Two at 9:30. Now, Christmas is the busiest time of year for a vicar, and Adam is full of ideas for his first Advent in London. However, he soon discovers that Christmas in St Saviour's is quite different to his sleepy Suffolk parish. He's under pressure from the Archdeacon to maximise seasonal profits. The diary is packed with unusual events, and he's up at the crack of dawn every morning to cook breakfast at the homeless shelter. Exhausted with a permanent hangover and midnight mass looming, he's in no mood for a house guest. Least of all, Alex's cantankerous father, Martin, who's played by Jeffrey Palmer. So I've seen a clip of that, and it does look really, really good. So, yeah, well, if you're watching Rev already, then you're not going to miss the last episode, are you? One thing that's slotted in, not at all Christmassy, but it's on tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on Channel 4. We've got Obsessive Compulsive Hoarder. Now, I saw the trailer for this, and they just look hilarious. In a pretty English village in the Surrey stockbroker belt lives the infamous Mr. Wallace, whose hoarding habits have spread across £1 million worth of property that used to belong to his parents. His detached bungalow, four-bedroom semi-detached house, and separate double garage are all stuffed from floor to ceiling with newspapers and other household items. Cutting Edge is given unique access to his intriguing home where no one else has ever ventured. Mr. Wallace is arguably probably the world's most extreme hoarder, and his house has become a death trap. It is so packed that he has to crawl over mountains of papers and magazines simply to move from room to room. It takes 40 minutes to get to his front door. To get to his front door from the chair he eats and sleeps in. The garden also acts as a dumping ground for tons of refuse, so old that it is overgrown by foliage and trees. Or foliage, whichever it is. Now, also in the trailer, they had a bit where he had papers stacked up to the ceiling right next to the gas cooker, and he was lighting the cooker. I mean, that's a health and safety hazard right there. Why don't the council go in and sort him out? Also coming up, Outnumbered, there's a Christmas special on Christmas Eve, BBC One at 9:20. The Brockmans want to go away for Christmas, but they wonder whether they can go with Grandad in hospital and whether they should go when Jane is their house sitter. Meanwhile, Ben causes trouble with his Christmas present, a metal detector. Also coming up, we've got Doctor Who, The Doctor, The Widow and The Wardrobe, which is obviously on Christmas Day on BBC One, and finally at the right time of 7 o'clock, because for years they just kept sticking it on at 6 o'clock, which is just way too early. I think they got that was strictly rubbish on before it. This year, anyway. Madcap caretaker greets evacuee Madge Arwell and her two children and leads them into a magical wintry world. She's lost her husband during World War II, even though he's in the cast as played by Alexander Armstrong. So I hope that doesn't mean he gets brought back to life, given that it's Doctor Who and that it's Christmas. Because when it's Doctor Who and Christmas, no one's allowed to die. There's also been the news that Karen Gillan's not going to be around much in the next series, and she's tipped to be replaced by a new companion, played by Jessica Brown Finley from Downton Abbey and Black Mirror. So we'll have to see how that pans out. The episode also stars Matt Smith, Claire Skinner, Maurice Cole, Holly Earle and Sam Stockman. Also on, it's something I don't watch, but a lot of people do, so I'll give it a mention. Downton Abbey on ITV, Christmas Day at 9 o'clock. It's Christmas 1919, and Downton Abbey is hosting a lavish Christmas party. Yet despite it being the season of goodwill, tensions are rife, and Bates's arrest has cast a shadow over the festivities. Will he be a condemned man, or will he be found innocent in time to dance with his new wife at the annual servants' ball? Mary has to consider a future with Sir Richard Carlyle following a contretemps at the shooting party, and Violet has concerns about Rosamond, whose new suitor, the dashing but raffish Lord Hepworth, is not all he seems. Stars Maggie Smith, Hugh Bonneville, Laura Carmichael, Jim Carter, Brendan Coyle and Michelle Dockery. Now, also another program which I don't go in for, but maybe it's... Should I give it another go? I don't know. I'm always giving it a go, and it's always rubbish. Absolutely fabulous. First episode is on BBC One on Christmas Day at 10 o'clock, and the first one's called Identity. And it says the award-winning sitcom returns for a brand new episode as a frightening visitor forces Patsy to find out who she really is. That's followed up on New Year's Day at 9:40 with an episode called Job. Adina tries to prove that she has still got it, and will a new client destroy her relationship with Safi or make it stronger? The programme stars Jennifer Saunders, Joanna Lumley, Julia Sawala, June Whitfield, Jane Horrocks and Lindsay Duncan. There's also The Borrowers on BBC One, Boxing Day at 7:30. It's a family adventure based on Mary Norton's classic children's books. The Borrowers are tiny people who live under the floorboards, resourcefully surviving by borrowing bits and pieces from the large residents who dwell above. After being discovered by human beings, borrowers Pod and Homily and the daughter Arietti are forced to leave their home while attempting to evade the clutches of obsessive scientist Professor Mildeye. Stars Robert Sheehan, Stephen Fry, Christopher Eccleston, Sean Dooley, or Sean Drooley, as I know one girl I know likes to, well, I just tease her with it, calling him Sean Drooley because she fancies him. Sharon Horgan and Aisling Loftus. It's about Ailing, but it's Aisling Loftus. She was in a brilliant drama a while ago called Dive, which is a two-part. I think it was nearly a year ago, probably just over. Absolutely brilliant. It's obviously not an iPlayer any longer, but if you can find it somewhere, well worth a watch. Then we've got the Big Fat Quiz of the Year 2011. That's on Channel 4 Tuesday the 27th of December at 9 o'clock. And Jimmy Carr puts a panel of A-list celebrities to the test as they battle it out to see who remembers most about the events of 2011. At the end of a multi-award winning year, Miranda Hart takes a seat on the panel for the first time. Also being inducted to the Big Fat Quiz Hall of Fame is legendary comedian Eddie Izzard, and also huge big bore about the Labour Party. To round off a trio of quiz virgins, Jamie Oliver swaps his saucepans for sarcasm, and they're competing alongside Big Fat Quiz of the Year veterans Jonathan Ross, David Walliams and David Mitchell. Can you recall which celebrity was winning this year? Charlie Sheen, obviously. Which sportsman had his secrets spilled in the House of Commons? I know, but am I allowed to mention it? And how on earth did select committee hearings become the must-watch TV of the summer? If you know the answer to all, some or even none of the above, then watch to find out who will follow in the footsteps of Jonathan Ross, Russell Brand, Simon Pegg, Noel Fielding, David Mitchell, Ruth Jones and Alan Carr to vie for the coveted Big Fat Quiz crown. I'm trying to say that when you're drunk. There's also Sherlock on BBC One, New Year's Day, 8:10. And it's the first episode of the second series. It's called the first one's called A Scandal in Belgravia. It's a contemporary crime drama based on the stories by Arthur Conan Doyle. A case of blackmail threatens to topple the monarchy itself, but soon Sherlock and John discover there is more to it than that. They find themselves battling international terrorism, rogue CIA agents, and a secret conspiracy involving the British government. This case will cast a longer shadow on their lives than they could ever imagine, as the great detective begins a long duel of wits with an antagonist as cold and ruthless and brilliant as himself. Stars Benedict Cumberbatch, try saying that when you're drunk, Martin Freeman, Eunice Stubbs, Rupert Graves, Mark Gatiss and Andrew Scott. Finally, there's Public Enemies on BBC One, which is on, because I'll be back after this one. This is on in three parts, and it's on Tuesday, January the 3rd, plus the Wednesday and the Thursday straight after at 9 o'clock. So drama exploring the relationship between a convicted murderer and his probation officer, Eddie Mottram. He's leaving prison having served his sentence for murder. But has he learned his lesson? And is he safe to release back into the community? Probation officer Paula Radnor is tasked with managing Eddie as he settles back into life on the outside. But with her checkered history, is she up to the task? It stars Anna Friel, Daniel Mays, Lorraine Ashbourne, Barnaby Kay, Aisling Loftus, popping up again, and Barbara Martin. That's everything for this week and for this year. Thanks to everyone who's been listening, and all the links to and everything to in, links to get me teeth in to everything in today's show is on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. As is the incredible video for the song I'm about to play. I've been doing this show since the end of May, and I'm looking forward to starting up again in 2012, shortly after New Year. But in the meantime, while normally I wouldn't play out with a long song, today, since it's nearly Christmas, I'm going to indulge myself. I'm going to dedicate this to Kevin Fletcher, who's the biggest Yes fan I know. Have a happy Christmas and New Year. And taken from the 1999 album The Ladder, this is all 9.5 minutes of Homeworld. This is 106.6.
106.6.